Hey guys, and welcome back to Knucklehead Radio. We've got a lot of stuff to cover today. We've got a lot of DC news, a lot of Star Wars news, some Marvel stuff. This past week or so has been really jam-packed with news, so I am super excited to dive into that with you guys. But before we do that, I do want to apologize for my most recent podcast. I did one on the NCAA March Madness tournament, and I was giving you guys my predictions and trying to give you guys some information and advice for filling out your brackets if you were doing so. And I gotta be honest with you, I was pretty off with my predictions. My bracket isn't too terrible compared to the rest of the field, but as I'm sure most of you have seen, this entire tournament has been absolutely ridiculous. It's not entirely my fault that I got so many things wrong, because everyone did, and it's just been entirely unpredictable. But I did want to say that before we get into everything else, that yeah, you probably shouldn't have listened to me. But they don't call it March Madness for just any reason. So anyways, let's dive into the pop culture stuff. This entire show is going to be jam-packed from start to finish. I do want to start out with some of the lighter stuff early on, but pretty much the whole show is going to be packed with juicy tidbits and pieces of information, so there really isn't going to be a whole lot of fluctuation there. So let's get into Marvel stuff first. We have more Star Wars and more DC stuff to talk about today than Marvel stuff, so let's hit that first and then we can move on from there. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has finally hit Disney Plus. It is the second MCU Disney Plus series to come out. Of course, we had WandaVision come out first, which was widely beloved up until about the final episode or the last couple episodes, but is still generally liked quite a bit. It was a new direction for Marvel and the MCU. It was quite different from some things that we had seen before. But The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has finally come out. They dropped just the first episode in the first week, whereas WandaVision dropped the first two episodes the first week. We are now beyond the second week of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, so we have two episodes and we are currently waiting on episode three. We're heading into the third week here. But The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is not like WandaVision. Like I said, WandaVision was something very new and different for the MCU. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is something very, very familiar. It seems very much like Civil War and The Winter Soldier, which are two of the best MCU films, in my opinion, and also in the opinion of the general audience. If you look at the scores and the ratings of all of the MCU movies, you will very often see those two films towards the top of the MCU. But I think it's kind of genius to have something so new for the MCU in the WandaVision series, and then, after that show ends, to come back to something that everyone knows and loves. Because not everyone was going to love WandaVision, and they likely knew this. But they know that their formula and what they do with things like The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has worked time and time again. So for those who didn't enjoy WandaVision, they would have another series that they could look forward to that came out not long after WandaVision at all. And that's something to touch on Star Wars for a minute that I think Star Wars needs to get a handle on. Star Wars has announced so many different shows that are coming out in the future, but the turnaround time from The Mandalorian Season 2 finale to the next series, The Bad Batch, which is dropping on May the 4th, is, I want to say, about 5 to 6 months. I can't remember quite when The Mandalorian Season 2 ended, but The Falcon and the Winter Soldier came out a mere couple of weeks after WandaVision ended. So MCU fans are getting fed, and they're getting fed well. Star Wars fans are being a bit deprived in that sense, and there are some who don't even like The Mandalorian, even though it has extremely good ratings. I personally find it very overrated. I know that's an unpopular opinion. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and while this isn't the sequel trilogy for me, which I really disliked, it's okay. I enjoy it. I'm glad that there's something that I can at least enjoy to an extent. And the season two finale for me was mind-blowing, but it's still not what I expect from Star Wars. And so for this to be the only thing we get in a span of 6 months, and then you look at the MCU, and they get a show like WandaVision, which some don't like, but then those people who don't like that only have to wait a couple of weeks, and then boom, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is out, which isn't only just another show that fans can watch and hopefully like, it is following a formula and involves characters and storylines that they know fans will like because they've seen it before. So I really think Star Wars needs to head in that direction. But back to the actual show itself. Like I said, it has 2 episodes out so far. The first one, I wasn't hooked, but I like Bucky, I like Sam, and it was entertaining, but I really didn't have anything to say after the first episode. Pretty much the extent of my thoughts were, yeah, that was fine. I look forward to the next one whenever it comes out. That was pretty much it. But now, after having watched the second episode, I am hooked. It is something that I look forward to every single week. I will be staying up for when it drops at 3 a.m. here where I live, which is just so unfortunate. I hate that so much. But now that the plot is sort of coming together a bit, it seems rather interesting, and I look forward to seeing where it heads and how it unravels. The action has been really fun to watch. And I love the dynamic between Bucky and Sam. It reminds me of Anakin and Obi-Wan in the beginning of Revenge of the Sith a lot, who, if any of you know anything about me, you know that I love Revenge of the Sith. I love Anakin. I love Obi-Wan. They're some of my favorite characters, and that's my favorite movie of all time. So for Bucky and Sam to remind me of those characters is a really, really high compliment, and I look forward to seeing their bickering and one giving the other sass and one being a smart ass. I just love that dynamic so much, so getting an entire series of that is going to be a blast. Now, onto a more grim subject regarding The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Wyatt Russell, who plays the new Captain America, which hopefully I didn't spoil that for anybody, but I mean, his appearance as the new Captain America was in all of the trailers and everything like that, so hopefully I don't have anybody mad at me about that. But yes, Wyatt Russell, who is the son of star Kurt Russell, who I'm a big fan of, is the new Captain America because Sam in the series decides to turn the shield away. He decides he doesn't want to be Captain America, but the government decides we need a new Captain America, so they pick somebody else who happens to be a character played by Wyatt Russell. Now, interesting fact before we get into the grim part of this topic, Wyatt Russell actually auditioned to play Captain America before Chris Evans ever got the role, so it's really interesting to me that they brought him back to play the new Captain America for this series, and I think that's really cool and probably made him pretty happy. And what sucks is that there are a lot of people who are hating on him and likely going to make him less happy. He made a comment saying that he really hopes that people don't hate his character, but he guesses if they do, then it's sort of an honor to be hated in the MCU. Which to me, that's just sad that any actor has to make a comment like that. Look, I get it. I get hating characters, whether that's because of their writing and they're just a bad character. I get loving to hate someone, like a villainous character who just really gets under your skin, but it's because they're written so well. But there is no excuse for hating on an actor simply because of a character they play. They're doing their best with the script that they get. It is how the character is written. It's how they are directed. They are just a vessel to portray a character to you. Now, I would get it if Wyatt Russell had done some bad things in real life, which he hasn't, as far as I'm aware. He just seems like a dude playing a character, and I've seen a lot of unwarranted hate going towards him. We saw how hate can negatively affect actors. They're just people, just like us. We saw with the Star Wars prequels what happened to Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks. He had severe depression and considered committing suicide, which is just awful because of the hate that he received. So I don't want this to happen to Wyatt Russell at all. Luckily for him, he's gotten plenty of roles before this show, and he seems like a decent actor who gets some roles, not somebody who will be blacklisted by Hollywood or anything like that, or hated for all of eternity. But let's not let this happen to anybody else going forwards. And from what I can tell from the first two episodes that I've seen, quick spoiler alert, he actually seems like a good dude. Now, I'm sure that that may change, but he's reached out to Sam and Bucky multiple times saying, hey, I'm the new Captain America. I get it that I'm not Steve and you were close friends with him, but I want to be friends with you guys. Let's take down these threats together. And every single time he reaches out to them, they're jerks to him. If anybody is being rude, it's Sam and Bucky. I get he said a couple of things, like saying that he feels like he knew Steve, and with as many traumatic experiences as Sam and Bucky have been through with Steve, that sounds kind of crappy. But it seems like Wyatt Russell is, his character anyways, is genuinely trying his best, and Sam and Bucky are shunning him. So even as a character, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. So I don't get the hate for the character. At least to this point, I don't get the hate for Wyatt Russell or any actor ever who is hated on specifically because of a character that they play. That is not okay. So let's not let this happen. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has a lot of great things going for it. Let's not put it in a negative light for something like this. Now to our other piece of Marvel news. Spider-Man No Way Home has finished filming, and all of the crew members got like these packages, like a shirt saying they were part of the cast and crew and lanyards and whatever. Movies do this for whatever reason. I saw this happen with Matt Reeves, the Batman, as well. It's just something that they do when you finish filming a film. But what's really interesting is that one of the people who got these from Spider-Man No Way Home, and I'm assuming that all of the cast and crew pretty much got the same stuff, is that on a shirt, the Spider-Man that was on one of the shirts wasn't Tom Holland's Spider-Man. It was Andrew Garfield's, and it was him wearing his suit from The Amazing Spider-Man 1, which is interesting because he changed his suit in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, so you would think that it would be that one, but it was actually the one from the first one. And of course, there has been heavy speculation for a long time that Spider-Man No Way Home will be this multiverse film that will feature Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, it'll feature Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, and confirmed already we have other actors from both of those sets of Spider-Man films, such as Alfred Molina's Doc Ock, such as Jamie Foxx's Electro. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. I feel like there will be some fans disappointed with what they decide to do, because I don't think all of these characters will have as big of a role as we are anticipating. What I'm really hoping is that this film is more of like a setup for an actual Spider-Verse film. I hope that this one is Tom Holland's third solo Spider-Man film, and then we get a Spider-Verse film coming later with all of these characters more prominently featured. Now, I brought this up in episode 2, I believe, of this podcast, where I was interviewing YouTuber David Lawler. I asked him, do you think there is room for the character of Daredevil in Spider-Man No Way Home? Because there are so many characters who are going to be appearing in this movie. There's so many characters that we think are going to be appearing, and there are so many characters that fans really want to have prominent roles, not just cameos. So it seems like it's just jam-packed, and there's not a lot of room for some of these characters. And Daredevil is a character who is also highly expected to appear in this movie. And to me, he just seemed kind of out of place because they're doing the whole Spider-Verse thing. Why would Daredevil be in it? And it was confusing to me, but I also hadn't seen Daredevil at that point. I now have. I binge-watched the entire series, and I love it. Daredevil may be my favorite Marvel character now, and I love Charlie Cox's portrayal of Matt Murdock in Daredevil. And to me, if I were to see him now after having seen the series, I would absolutely love it. I don't care if it makes sense. Now I do feel like it does make sense if they go the route that I hope they do, where The third Spider-Man film, Spider-Man No Way Home, is more of a setup. It's a Tom Holland solo Spider-Man film. And then they decide to go with a bigger Spider-Verse film later on. If they do that, I think there's definitely room for a Daredevil appearance. Now, what most are expecting is that Daredevil won't actually be in the movie, that it will be Matt Murdock, and he will be playing a lawyer for Peter Parker, who will be going to court. Because, of course, if you saw the end credit scene of Spider-Man Far From Home, you know that he is on the run, that he is wanted, and that everyone thinks that he attacked the city and wanted to kill people because Quentin Beck, or Mysterio, who was the villain from Spider-Man Far From Home, set Peter up. He framed him, and so now that's where we are going to be in the next Spider-Man movie. And so I think that it definitely makes sense for Matt Murdock to make an appearance as a lawyer for Peter to really introduce Daredevil to the larger MCU fandom, because there's a lot of people who are MCU fans who haven't seen the Netflix Marvel shows because they weren't in the MCU at first. They were written like they were supposed to be, like some of the events of the Daredevil series center around the destruction that occurred in New York from the first Avengers movie, but they weren't technically part of the MCU during the creation of these shows, but they were written in a way that they could easily implement these characters and these storylines into the MCU when Disney eventually got the rights to these properties, which they now have. And so that's what I think that they're going to do. And Kevin Feige has acknowledged the existence of these shows and the fandoms that they have, and it seems like he is definitely going to respect them. He's always done a fantastic job of respecting fans and respecting source material, and he's even said that there are people out there who even love these shows more than the MCU's Disney Plus series or even some that are on other networks such as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so I have a lot of respect for Feige. I think he's great at what he does, so I definitely think we will see these characters eventually in the MCU. And introducing Daredevil as a lawyer just in a cameo in a Spider-Man movie, I think, is a great way to do that. So I can definitely see that happening, and I hope we do, because I would definitely geek out. Matt Murdock, Daredevil, is probably my favorite superhero in Marvel now after having seen the Netflix series. He's kind of like Marvel's version of Batman, and Batman is my favorite superhero of all time, and it's not even close. Of course, there are significant differences between Batman and Daredevil, but getting a much darker and grimmer version of a superhero in the Marvel world, especially compared to what we usually get from Marvel, is really interesting to me. And the charisma that Charlie Cox plays Daredevil with is right up my alley. He reminds me a lot of Hayden Christensen's Anakin or James Marsden's Cyclops. Those types of vibes are something that I gravitate towards a lot. I don't typically get really into super badass characters like Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, and don't get me wrong, I love Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. It was a perfect casting, and Logan is one of the greatest comic book movies ever, but I'm not super into those types of characters as much as most people are. There's just something inherently fascinating to me about characters like Anakin, Cyclops, and Daredevil, where they're younger guys. They're not like seasoned vets like Logan or Ben Affleck's Batman or anything like that. They're in their physical prime, and they're either more intelligent than everybody else or they are more powerful than everybody else, but they know that, and they don't act too cocky about it. I mean, they might from time to time just to pull your leg a little bit, but they're not overly witty or anything like that. They are intense, they're focused, they're cold, calculated, dialed in, and they do their job well. And so there's just something that really draws me to those types of characters. So I really hope we get to see Charlie Cox as Daredevil again. I think we will, and I really hope we get to see him in No Way Home, potentially setting up a Daredevil season 4 or a new Daredevil Disney Plus series, or maybe even Daredevil movies. I would love to see Daredevil films directed by Christopher Nolan. I think that would be absolutely amazing. But moving on from Marvel and on to DC, Zack Snyder's Justice League finally came out a little over a week ago, I want to say. I'm not quite sure how exactly long it has been at this point, but it's still relatively new, and Snyder fans absolutely ate it up. They loved it. They're saying this is the greatest comic book movie ever. They're saying that it has some of the greatest moments they've ever seen, that it's so much better than Joss Whedon's, and I agree to that point. I think it is certainly better than Joss Whedon's, and I'm so glad for Zack Snyder that he got to complete his vision. He's an incredibly nice and humble guy, and he's been through so much with the tragic loss of his daughter, so I'm so happy for him, and I'm really happy for fans. I think that this fan movement pushing for the Snyder Cut, when a lot of fans were told it would never happen, and they pushed so hard that they finally got it, that I think it sets up something great for fans going forward, that we get to decide what type of content that we want to see. I mean, we are the ones who are paying for this content after all, so we should have a say in that kind of thing. So I think that this is a huge win all around the board, but if you want my honest opinion on the movie, I still didn't like it. I've seen just about every single Zack Snyder movie that there is, including Dawn of the Dead, including Watchmen, Sucker Punch, and I've seen all of his DCEU films, and I just don't think he's good at making movies. He's certainly unique and has style, and I root for him. I have nothing against the guy whatsoever. I just do not think his movies are good. I really hope that one day he will surprise me and change my mind a bit, but I just don't get any enjoyment out of the things that he makes. I do to an extent. That was a lie. I just overall am not a fan of what he does. But like, I really enjoy what he does with the character of Superman in his DCEU films. And I think Henry Cavill was a brilliant casting. But a lot of the Batman stuff, not too big of a fan. And a lot of the other stuff, I'm just not really a fan of. So they have their moments, but for me, I'm just not a Snyder fan and don't get why people love his work so much, but I'm happy that they do. If you want to hear more about what I think about Zack Snyder's Justice League, I have a full breakdown and review of the movie on my YouTube channel, Knucklehead TV. I think the video is about 20 minutes long, give or take. I don't want to spend the entire podcast here today talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League specifically, but if you are interested, you can go check that out to hear why I'm not the biggest fan of that movie or his movies. But there is some more news regarding Zack that I would like to touch on. There is this whole Restore the Snyderverse movement happening right now, which is the successor to the Release the Snyder Cut movement. And Warner Brothers has actually come out and said that they don't have any plans to bring Zack back for any future DCEU movies or Justice League sequels or anything like that. And so they don't plan to restore the Snyderverse. And despite the fact that a Release the Ayer Cut movement has also started up because the Release the Snyder Cut movement was a success, Warner Brothers has said that they also do not have plans to restore David Ayer's original vision for his Suicide Squad movie, not to be confused with James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie, which is new and coming out this summer. And I'm super excited for that, and I will touch on that in just a minute. But according to David Ayer, his version of Suicide Squad was not at all what it came out, and it scared executives, and I believe he said that they wanted a movie more like Deadpool, so that's what they turned it into. I didn't like his Suicide Squad movie at all, but I would like to see what his actual vision for that movie was before I can actually critique him. So I support that, and I also support the Restore the Snyderverse movement, despite the fact that I don't really like Zack Snyder's movies or the vast majority of DCEU movies, to be completely honest with you. However, what I do not support, and I'm seeing a lot of, is Snyder fans trying to put down other creators, even creators in the DCEU that Zack supports, to prop up Zack Snyder's films. There's a lot of people crapping on James Gunn's Suicide Squad, which is coming out soon, which will be in the DCEU, and I believe Zack is an executive producer on it, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not for that. I know James Gunn was in a controversy a while back. He said some edgy jokes. I don't know what they were, but a lot of people weren't happy with him. Supposedly, he is an abuse survivor. I really do not know the story, so I don't want to get my facts wrong here. But when it comes to the movie specifically, I don't think it's cool to put down a creator or the movie to prop up somebody else's. And even James Gunn aside, you look at Matt Reeves, who he has an upcoming Batman film coming out in March of next year, which looks amazing and might be the best comic book movie since The Dark Knight. It looks so good, and it looks right up my alley in terms of what I love about Batman. And there's people saying that if you support Matt Reeves' vision for the Batman, then you're going against Snyder, so don't watch this movie. And to me, that's just such a load of crap. Even Snyder himself is excited to see what Matt Reeves does with Batman. So for all of you Snyder fans out there, it is totally cool for you to love Snyder's vision and love it more than all of the other versions of Batman and all of these other characters, but you don't need to put down other people's creations. I don't even like Snyder's movies, and I support him. You don't have to like these other versions, but you can still support them. Nobody is trying to stop you other than executives at Warner Brothers and things like that. Now, back to James Gunn's Suicide Squad. If you don't know, James Gunn is the creator of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, which I loved the first one. The second one was a bit boring for me, but a lot of people really loved that one too. And his style is super unique and super interesting. He's great with soundtracks and things like that. The trailer for his Suicide Squad movie dropped just a couple of days ago, and to me it looks great, and I think this is going to be the best DCEU film. For me, Wonder Woman and Shazam are the top two, and I like those a decent amount, but I don't love those. If James Gunn can bring the energy that he did with the Guardians of the Galaxy films, but in a darker and grittier way to fit the whole Suicide Squad concept, I think for me, this might be above and beyond the best DCEU film. Harley Quinn will, of course, be in this movie as she was in the first Suicide Squad movie. And to me, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn is quite literally the best thing to come out of the DCEU, which has primarily been filled with disappointments, in my opinion. But when it comes to Margot as Harley, you can't go wrong. She captures the essence of the character so perfectly. It is pretty tragic to me that her Harley has to pair with Jared Leto's Joker. I know there is an increasing amount of people who enjoy Jared Leto's Joker, but I personally can't stand it. Just one of the many things that I don't like about the DCEU. But I did see some people saying that based on this trailer alone, which there's only one trailer for James Gunn's Suicide Squad out right now, and it just came out, there's been some people saying that she doesn't seem the same as she did in the first two films, Suicide Squad and then Birds of Prey, and I think that's just ridiculous. She seems literally the exact same as she always does, and even if she didn't, it was just a trailer. So I'm really looking forward to this movie. For me, this really could be a huge step in the right direction for the DCEU, and this could finally deliver me something that I really love from the DCEU. As I said, I enjoy Wonder Woman and Shazam quite a bit, but I don't know if I enjoy them quite to the extent in which I would say I love them. But I think knowing what James Gunn did with Guardians of the Galaxy, knowing how much I love Harley Quinn in these movies and Margot's portrayal of that character, and the fact that John Cena is in this movie, I freaking love John Cena. He was a childhood hero of mine. I used to watch WWE all the time. These days, he's been in quite a bit of comedies, and he's actually really funny, in case you may not have noticed. So I hope that this movie helps elevate him and turn it into an action star, which I think is long overdue. They're making a HBO Max series about the character that he's playing in this movie, which I think is really exciting. There's a lot of people who are saying, why do we need that? We're pushing for the Snyderverse and pushing for these other things. We don't need a series about John Cena's character. But dude, to me, a series about John Cena playing this over-the-top comic book character is more than enough to sell me. John Cena is awesome. So this whole movie, The Suicide Squad, has a lot going for it. So I am Really, really looking forward to it, and I hope that when it's all said and done, I can finally say that I love something about the DCEU. Now, moving on to Star Wars. This is slightly old news, probably about a week to 2 weeks old, but I wanted to cover it because it involves one of my all-time favorite Star Wars characters, and it's something where you kind of have to be in the know to have heard about this, and obviously there are a lot of people who aren't. So I wanted to go over this. It appears that actor Mina Massoud, I apologize if I mispronounced his name, he played Aladdin in live action, Disney's live action remake of that movie. It appears he's going to be playing Ezra Bridger from Star Wars Rebels in live action. It had been heavily speculated for a long time that he was one of the top candidates for the role, considering that Ezra Bridger is sort of like Star Wars' version of Aladdin. He's been called Space Aladdin many times, and obviously he has a pre-existing relationship with Disney. There were also a couple other actors in the mix. Taylor Gray, who was the voice actor for Ezra in Star Wars Rebels, who I was really hoping he was going to get the role personally, because I am a huge Ezra fan. He is extremely relatable to me. And he's sort of like a mix between Anakin and Luke, in my opinion, and those are two of my favorite characters ever. So I really, really like Ezra, and I loved Taylor's portrayal of the character. There's a lot of people saying that Taylor can't play Ezra because Taylor is white and Ezra is not a white character. Taylor Gray is not white. From what I understand, he is Filipino, Native American, and Portuguese, and I actually tweeted this out, saying Taylor Gray is not white, and he liked that tweet. So that's pretty much confirmation on the matter. So let's just move on from that part of it. But there was also another actor, Rahul Kohli, who I'm sure a lot of Star Wars fans know at this point. He's done virtual Star Wars watch parties. He's hung out with some Star Wars actors. He's met Star Wars Theory. He's talked to Sam Witwer. So he's in the Star Wars community, and he trolled for a long time that he was going to be playing Ezra, but it seems at this point he is not going to be. It was reported by Kessel Run Transmissions, who are, in my opinion, the most reliable leakers or scoopers in Star Wars, that Mina was going to play Ezra, and I was hoping that that wouldn't be the case, despite the fact that I think he is a good actor, and I liked him as Aladdin, and he would make a good Ezra. I just really was pulling for Taylor. But it wasn't entirely confirmed because, of course, scoops can be wrong. Like I said, they are very reliable. They reported that the Bad Batch was happening before anybody else, and of course it wound up happening. But I was crossing my fingers that they were wrong on this one, and there still isn't official confirmation by Lucasfilm on this matter. But Mina actually posted something on Instagram, a photo of himself with a caption that was actually a quote from Ezra Bridger, and not even a well-known Ezra quote. It was something that was very obscure and from a totally random episode, a quote in which he would have to be watching the series to know and put that out there. So to me, I think that pretty much solves that question, that yes, he is indeed playing Ezra. He's probably watching Rebels, studying the character to learn how to play him as best he can. So I respect him for that. I do feel really bad for Taylor because he really wanted to play Ezra in live action. He's liking all these tweets on Twitter of people saying that Taylor should play Ezra. And supposedly he actually recorded a lot of lines for an animated Rebels sequel that was in development before it got scrapped and they turned everything into live action after the success of The Mandalorian. And obviously, as a big fan of Hayden Christensen's Anakin, I know that Hayden was actually screwed out of voicing Anakin in The Clone Wars. He said he was willing to do it. He said he just needed to get the phone call, but apparently that never happened. So to see this happen to Taylor, another actor who I like a lot in Star Wars, is just really unfortunate. But I do look forward to Mina's portrayal. I think he looks a lot like Ezra, and from seeing what he did as Aladdin in that movie, I think he can definitely capture Ezra's essence pretty well. So fingers crossed all goes well, because I love Ezra as a character, and I don't want to see a drastic change like we saw with Anakin from the prequels to The Clone Wars. Which, don't get me wrong, I do like Matt Lanter a lot. I think he's a great guy, and I actually like the character of Anakin that he plays a lot. It's just very different from the prequel Anakin, and that was the one that I grew up with and the one that was first, so I don't think that character portrayals should be vastly different, because then you get different fans of different portrayals, and it's just not good for continuity. In other Star Wars casting news, Sebastian Stan is once again in the spotlight. As I said earlier, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier has finally come out, and of course, he is the Winter Soldier in the MCU, so he stars in this show. And if you haven't seen these fan casts or these pictures floating around the internet for forever now, which if you haven't, you must be living under a rock because they've been plastered everywhere. Sebastian Stan looks a lot like Mark Hamill. People have put his face side by side with Mark Hamill's, people have blended his face with Mark Hamill's, and so pretty much the entire internet says that if we get another Luke Skywalker and we have to recast Luke and possibly Han and Leia and Lando, that Sebastian Stan is the man that we want to see as Luke Skywalker. And I'm definitely on board with that, because he certainly looks a lot like him. I think his voice sounds similar to him, and I think it is just a match made in heaven. Now, he has been asked if he would do it. He said he would do it if he got the permission from Mark Hamill, and he would be glad to take up the mantle as Luke, which is funny because he's being asked this question even by interviewers and people on talk shows. When they're talking about The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they're trying to promote this huge Marvel show, and then all of these interviewers are asking him if he'll play Luke Skywalker in Star Wars. So I just think that's funny, and so this fan cast has a lot of hype behind it, even more so than Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka, which, if you don't remember, that actually was a fan cast on the internet that Dave Filoni saw, and so that's how that happened. So very likely, this Sebastian Stan as Luke thing could come to fruition. Now, Mark Hamill has given Sebastian Stan permission. He said that it is totally cool by him if he wants to keep the character's legacy alive, but also that Mark doesn't have any say in what Disney or Lucasfilm does whatsoever. But regardless of that fact, I still think Sebastian Stan as Luke is going to happen. I've heard some people say that because Sebastian Stan didn't play Luke in the Mandalorian Season 2 finale where Luke appeared, that they don't think he will play Luke in the future and that they're just going to do the whole CGI thing for the foreseeable future. But in my opinion, that's just not feasible. It clearly looked CGI. It looked good, but not fantastic. His face didn't move super well. His mouth wasn't moving a lot. And he clearly looked fake. And for all of the action scenes that he was in, he had his hood over his entire face so that you couldn't see it. So it was just a brief moment where you saw his face. The only reason I think that they did that was so that everyone could have one final experience with Mark Hamill's Luke, because of course there were a lot of people, including myself, that were upset with Luke from The Last Jedi and the sequel trilogy. So in my opinion, I think that Mandalorian Luke was sort of just one final moment with Mark Hamill's Luke, and now going forward they will likely recast him, probably Sebastian Stan playing him. But what I think is going to be hard if Sebastian Stan does play Luke is the fact that they still would have to recast Han, Leia, and Lando. While Sebastian is perfect for Luke, you have to remember, he's ripped from working out for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, so he'd have to slim down a little bit. He is 6 foot tall, so you would have to find a tall actor to play Han, because Han is a lot taller than Luke is. Harrison Ford, I think, is like 6'2", and Mark Hamill was like 5'8", or something like that. So that height difference still has to exist to an extent to keep that immersion alive. And you also have to think about the ages of the characters at this time. Harrison Ford is 9 years older than Mark Hamill, and in Return of the Jedi, Harrison Ford was 41 years old. Okay. Sebastian Stan is turning 39 this year, and the content that these characters are supposedly going to be in, The Mandalorian, and there is Rangers of the New Republic, and I think the Ahsoka show takes place around the same time. All of these shows take place about 6 to 7 years after Return of the Jedi. So even considering that fact, Luke would only be like 28, and you would have a 39-year-old Sebastian Stan playing him. So you would have to get a Han that is taller than Sebastian Stan and that looks older than Sebastian Stan. I looked around a little bit and there weren't a lot of great options, but one that did stick out to me a little bit was Aaron Eckhart, who of course played Harvey Dent or Two-Face from The Dark Knight. I think he is a terrific actor. He's a little bit taller, and with heightening insoles, he would look a decent amount taller than Sebastian Stan. He is slightly older. You can see the wrinkles in his face a little bit. He pulls off the whole 70s, 80s long hair thing well, like Harrison Ford did. And he's got a deeper voice, and because he's such a great actor, I definitely think he could pull off a Harrison Ford type vibe. So that would be my pick for Han, but I'm still not 100% sold on that idea like I am for Sebastian Stan as Luke. I am 100% sold on Billy Lord as Leia. That is Carrie Fisher's daughter. She looks so much like Carrie Fisher, and to me, with her being an actor and looking just like her mom, there is no other person that you can cast as Leia. It simply would not be right. And then my pick for Lando is Chiwetel Ejiofor. I apologize if I butchered that name, but you may know him. He plays Mordo from Doctor Strange. He's also been in The Martian. He's been in 12 Years a Slave. He's been in 2012. I think he voiced Scar in the newer Lion King movie, I believe. He is a pretty good actor, and he looks similar to Billy Dee Williams. I think that he can pull off the vibe that Billy Dee did for Lando, and he's got a similar voice. I believe he is British, and he has an accent, but of course, being as good of an actor as he is, he could sound just like Billy Dee. So that's my pick for Lando as well. But I'm not 100% sold on him or Aaron as Han or Lando, but Sebastian and Billy as Luke and Leia, absolutely. And for our final topic of the day, more Star Wars casting news. But this is a big one. Star Wars and Lucasfilm officially dropped a casting list for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Now, of course, we already knew that Ewan McGregor, starring as Obi-Wan, would be in the show, as well as Hayden Christensen coming back as Darth Vader and presumably Anakin Skywalker. That was announced about a year after the initial announcement of the Obi-Wan show. And then a little bit later, we got some information that Indira Varma, who was an actress from Game of Thrones, would be in the show. But those were the only actors that we knew were involved. But just the other day, we got a cast list. It's certainly not the entire cast because it's not enough people to fill an entire series. And there are some names that we are expecting that didn't appear on this list, but there certainly is some interesting names and some interesting choices, and frankly, I absolutely love this cast. So let me read off to you some of the actors and actresses who will be in this series. This, again, was dropped on the official Star Wars Twitter page and website. There's an image to go along with a small article, but let me read you off who is going to be a part of it. So, of course, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, Hayden Christensen as Darth Vader and presumably Anakin. Then we have Moses Ingram, who made an Instagram post after this announced that says she plays with lightsabers, and I believe she deleted that post afterwards. So there were some people speculating that she might play a younger Ahsoka for Clone Wars flashbacks, which everyone is assuming we will get Clone Wars flashbacks, and if we don't, I think it's safe to assume that people will riot, but I think Disney and Lucasfilm have learned their lesson, and they know, yeah, they gotta do Clone Wars flashbacks. But I'm not quite sure if Moses is young enough to play a 14 to 17-year-old Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars. And there's a lot of people saying they should just de-age Rosario. Look, I love Rosario. I think she is great as Mando-age Ahsoka and could even work in the Obi-Wan series in the present time period, which is 10 years after Revenge of the Sith. But as a teenage girl, I really can't see that. An adult face is an adult face no matter how young you de-age them. And it would just be so much easier to recast Ahsoka as a younger actress for Clone Wars flashbacks. We are going to see Rosario's Ahsoka again. We have an entire show where Rosario is going to be starring as Ahsoka. It's called Ahsoka, so she's not going anywhere. But to potentially try to de-age Rosario, possibly have to put her face on somebody else's body to make Ahsoka look smaller, it's just way too much of a hassle, so I don't think they're going to do that. Moses Ingram, though, back to her. I believe that she is going to be playing an Inquisitor or a surviving Jedi. I don't think it will be Ahsoka, and I think it will be interesting to see more characters in this time period who are lightsaber-wielding, force-wielding characters. Next, we have Joel Edgerton, or Edgerton, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce his name, and then Bonnie Piesse, I believe. Sorry, I'm just butchering everybody's name today. But those two individuals actually played Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. They didn't have super extended roles, but they've been in Star Wars before. They play characters who are iconic characters from A New Hope, so we know who they are going to play in this series. And outside of Hayden and Ewan, those two are the only people who we know who they're going to play. Everybody else, as of right now, is an unknown. So yes, that does mean that Liam Neeson, who is highly expected to appear in this series and speak to Obi-Wan and teach him how to become a Force ghost, is not listed on this cast list. Neither was Temuera Morrison, who many expect to play Commander Cody, or Clones, or Captain Rex in flashbacks, or whatever. He has one of the craziest roles of all time. He was not listed either. Neither was James Earl Jones, which really surprises me considering that we know that Vader is in this series anyways and that Hayden Christensen is in the series. I have heard some people complain about his voice a little bit in Rogue One or in Rebels, saying that he doesn't quite sound the same as he used to. Obviously, he's getting up there in age. I personally have not noticed it, and even if it sounded somewhat worse, I say let him do it regardless. It's still freaking James Earl Jones. But it is possible that they may start transitioning to other voice actors. I believe there's a voice actor named Scott Lawrence who does Vader's voice in a lot of the video games and things, and he does a really good job as well. But come on, you have to have James Earl Jones. This might be the last chance that he gets to voice Vader, and this is going to be one of the biggest pieces of Star Wars content ever. So it's got to be him, and it doesn't make sense to me why he wasn't listed, as I said, because Vader and Hayden are in this series. Obviously, it makes sense for Liam as Qui-Gon or Temuera as any of the clones because they aren't confirmed to be in that series. So they're likely just saving those characters as surprises for us when we actually watch the series. Obviously, it being an Obi-Wan show, we knew that Ewan was going to be in it. Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen aren't really big surprises, plus they tie in with the narrative that Obi-Wan is watching over Luke. And I assume we will get a young Luke in this series. They probably just didn't list him because it's a kid, and listing kids isn't the same as listing adults, so they probably just wanted to protect him a little bit. Maybe, I don't really know. And then with Hayden, fans pushed so hard for Hayden to be in this series, so they likely put his name out there just so that they could put fans' minds at ease that yes, Hayden Christensen will be in this series, and now we can all relax about it. But as for other big actors that could be in this series, obviously I mentioned Liam and Temuera weren't mentioned, and that they're probably saving them as surprises. That also means that no, Natalie Portman and Ian McDiarmid also were not mentioned in this cast list. I actually don't know if I expect to see either of them in this series. I really hope we do. In my opinion, Ian McDiarmid is the best actor in Star Wars, period. He's a classical theater actor. His performance in Revenge of the Sith was sensational, and I think he's really funny and a really nice guy, and he is perfect as the Emperor, so I really hope we see him, but I don't know if he will come back because it seems very Vader and Obi-Wan centered in this series. Plus, he just came back for The Rise of Skywalker, and that turned into a dumpster fire, so I don't know about that. As for Natalie, there isn't a whole lot of room for her in this series. I would love for there to be, but she could really only fit in Clone Wars flashbacks, which of course we all assume they're doing, but we don't know how much they're doing of these flashbacks. And she could also fit into visions or nightmares of Darth Vader's, but this show is Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's not Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader. Now, personally, I think it should be Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader. It should be like called Twin Sons or something, but it's not. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi, so I don't know how often we will dive deep into the mind of Vader. And Natalie Portman is a really big actress. She's really busy doing other things. She gets paid a lot of money to do what she does, so I don't know if they will pay such a big actress to come back for such a minimal role, most likely, especially when she was hated quite a bit for being in these movies, and she had to call in a favor to be in V for Vendetta to get her career back on the right track and eventually become a very successful actress. But apparently she said many times that Hollywood was blacklisting her because of the Star Wars prequels, which is really sad. But personally, I really hope we see Natalie. I think I would get very emotional over that, because Hayden, while he's coming back and getting redemption for his performances in the prequels, which I loved, I think he was fantastic in episode 3. He played my favorite character ever to perfection. Episode 2, yeah, I was a little bit shaky because of the romantic dialogue, but one of the primary concerns or criticisms of the prequels was the chemistry between Natalie and Hayden and their romantic dialogue and things like that. I don't have nearly as much of a problem with it as most people, but I really want to see them back together for one scene, and I want Natalie to get quote-unquote redemption as well, and I want them to both prove to everyone that they are great actors and that they have great chemistry together. So I'm crossing my fingers so hard that we see Natalie. I will be disappointed if we don't see her, but at the same time, it's still a freaking Obi-Wan Kenobi show with Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Darth Vader. It's gonna be awesome regardless, but I do hope we see Natalie Portman. Now, back to the actual cast list. Let me get through this and quit my rambling. So we have Ewan as Obi-Wan, Hayden as Anakin slash Vader, Joel as Owen, Bonnie as Beru, Moses Ingram, as I mentioned, possibly Ahsoka, possibly an Inquisitor, possibly a Jedi survivor of Order 66, Indira Varma, who I mentioned, she's an actress from Game of Thrones. A lot of people think that she could be playing Asajj Ventress, which a lot of people are also opposing that, saying Asajj Ventress is dead in this time, but they're obviously forgetting the whole Clone Wars flashback thing, and there's actually a really significant Clone Wars flashback that Asajj Ventress could be in. I'm not sure if it's canon anymore, but originally Asajj Ventress was the one who gave Anakin his scar on his eye. There's a whole comic strip about it. You can find the exact part where it happens. You can see the dialogue and you can see her lightsaber slashing across his eye. It's really, really cool. And outside of that particular thing happening, you also look at the 2003 Clone Wars series made by Genndy Tartakovsky, which is also no longer canon. That is actually hitting Disney Plus on April 2nd, which by the time I'm done recording this, it may be April 2nd, so go check that out. And if it's April 2nd, that also means The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is out, and I didn't finish this in time, so I'm just a complete mess. But anyways, in the 2003 Clone Wars series, there is a fight between Anakin and Ventress on Yavin 4. It is super tense and super emotional. Ventress kills Anakin's entire clone squad, It rains, it gets dark, the moon looks red in a certain light. There's a lot of cool things done with the imagery, but eventually Anakin proves that he is the superior apprentice and unleashes his dark side in this duel. So you mix all of that together with the whole Scar thing, I think that can make for a really powerful and just really epic Clone Wars flashback moment in this Obi-Wan series. If Indira is playing Asajj Ventress, that makes a lot of sense in accordance to who a lot of people believe this next actor that I'm about to mention is going to be playing, and that is Kumail Nanjiani. Now, I'm sure you've seen Kumail around before. He's going to be in an upcoming Marvel film. He's a famous comedian. He's all over the place, so great to see him in this series. But a lot of people believe he could be playing the character of Quinlan Vos. Now, Quinlan Vos was a Jedi during the Clone Wars. He was a very relaxed Jedi, to put it simply. They made him out to be like the Big Lebowski in the Clone Wars cartoon. And his whole thing is he doesn't really follow the Jedi code to an exact point, and he kind of just follows the Force. He did survive Order 66, and he does not have a canonical death, but the reason that that makes sense that he'd be playing Quinlan Vos if Indira is playing Asajj is because Quinlan and Asajj actually had a thing. They sort of fell in love. I didn't read the books in which this happened, but Asajj eventually dies and is killed by Count Dooku before Revenge of the Sith, but there is a small time period before Revenge of the Sith where they sort of get together. Quinlan's sort of straying from the Jedi way a little bit, Asajj is straying from the Sith way, and they both sort of feel like outcasts, at least as far as I'm aware. I think Quinlan is still part of the Jedi Order at this time, but anyways, I know for a fact that they get together, Asajj then dies, Quinlan survives Order 66, and he has not died up to this point, so it could make a lot of sense for him to be in the series, possibly in the present time period, where Obi-Wan is on Tatooine watching over Luke 10 years after Revenge of the Sith, and that also could be how we see a potential Ventress flashback. But Kumail and Indira also might not be playing either of those characters. We don't know, just speculation. Next on the cast list is Rupert Friend, who has a very Imperial look about him. He's got a very square face. It looks kind of villainous, not to say that in a mean way, but he definitely could pass for somebody like a Tarkin or a Krennic or any of those guys. So that's who I would guess he is playing. Next on the cast list, we have O'Shea Jackson Jr. And if that name sounds familiar, that's because he's the son of famous rapper Ice Cube. And he actually played his father in the Straight Outta Compton movie, which was a big hit that came out not too long ago. And I liked him a lot in that movie and other things that I have seen him in, such as, I think, one of the more recent Godzilla films. So it's nice to see his face in this series, and I can't wait to see what type of character he plays. I really don't have a guess as to who he might play, but he's a cool guy, and I'm glad to see him in this show. Then we have Sung Kang, who is famous for his role as Han in the Fast and the Furious films. I've never watched those movies, but apparently his character's real name in those movies is Han Solo, and I guess that's like a joke, or at least that's what I've been told by people who have seen those movies, or maybe they're just pranking me. I really don't know, but I'm also told that he is a driver in those movies. Duh, I would assume that that's the case with the Fast and the Furious movies, but considering that, considering his character's name might be Han Solo, at least it's Han anyways, and he drives, I think he would make for a perfect pilot in this series. I don't know what for, what his role would be as a pilot, but I think he could pull that off really well just looking at him, and his hairstyle looks very cool and very 70s, 80s-esque, like a Harrison Ford, so yeah, I'd like to see him as a pilot, smuggler type. I think that would work really well. And next we have Simone Kessel, which that's very fitting, having that last name and being in a Star Wars show, like the famous Kessel Run that Han Solo spoke of in A New Hope, and then we got to see in the Solo movie. Haha, very funny, neat coincidence. Simone Kessel, I really can't recall anything that she has been in. She has one of those faces, like, I feel like I've seen her a ton of times before. I looked at her IMDb page, and the only thing that I would have seen her in is San Andreas, a movie starring The Rock. And as cheesy as that movie was for a typical action blockbuster, I actually liked it. So if I liked that movie, I'm sure I was fine with her performance. So I'm sure I will be fine with whatever she does in this series. And then finally, on this cast list, the last person that I saw also happens to be the person that I'm the most excited to see in this series that hadn't already been named. Of course, Hayden and Ewan are at the top. We don't know if people like Liam or Natalie will be in this series, but out of everyone that was a new announcement when this cast list dropped, this person I am the most excited for, Benny Safdie. And if you recognize that name, it's because he and his brother are actually writers and directors, and very good ones at that. They actually made the movie Good Time and the movie Uncut Gems, and I loved both of those movies. Benny, of course, is an actor as well, considering that he is in this series. He also played the brother of Robert Pattinson in the movie Good Time. He's a good actor, but he's an even better writer and director. Their films have so much personality, and they are so unique, and I will watch absolutely anything those guys make, and I love the fact that their foot is now in the door in the Star Wars universe, and I am crossing everything that I have, and I'm praying that they somehow get a piece of Star Wars content to create down the line. A Star Wars film or a Star Wars series or a Star Wars trilogy by the Safdie brothers? Oh my god, those would be unquestionably the best Star Wars films or series or whatever since Revenge of the Sith. They are really good. If you haven't seen their movies, I highly recommend them. In watching their movies, they're not the first people that you would think of to make a Star Wars film, like you would think of Peter Jackson or Christopher Nolan, since they've done things that could translate well to Star Wars. The types of movies that they typically make, the Safdie brothers, are like crime dramas, but how good they are at writing, how good they are at directing, and they do some pretty cool spacey, trippy, techno stuff with the music and the shots, and they do a lot of cool stuff with lighting and whatnot. They're just so talented that I don't think it even matters how different a crime drama might be to a Star Wars film. They might even make a Star Wars film like a crime drama. They might do something with some smugglers trying to steal a holocron or something like that. I really don't know. All I know, these guys are great. I'm glad they're in Star Wars, and I hope that they get to create something in Star Wars in the future. But with that said, guys, that is the end of the Obi-Wan Kenobi cast list. I absolutely love it. There isn't anybody on this cast list that I'm like a huge fan of outside of Hayden and Ewan, of course. There's no like Ryan Gosling or Bruce Campbell or anything like that, but everybody on this cast list is so unique and so different and just brings so many interesting things to the table that I think this is the perfect mix and group of people for this series. So I am super excited to see all of these people in this show. And with that said, that brings us to the end of this show. We made it over an hour today on this podcast, the longest episode of Knucklehead Radio yet. If you got through it to the end, thank you guys so much for listening, and I will catch you guys next time.